Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and Anne Guest.
Welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. This is episode 168. You're with Paul Spain.
And Steve Sims.
Welcome along, Steve. Good to have you here.
A lovely day in town too.
Indeed. Now, just for those who don't know you, remind us where you fit into the technology sphere in New Zealand.
Pretty much been involved in IT now for well over 20 years, and more recently in the last 10 years been a Wi-Fi guy with Tommy Zone. So I started that up about 8 years ago.
Great. Well, let's jump in. Now, first question I've got, I want to know about that thing sitting on your wrist that looks rather fancy, that was announced during CES in Vegas.
Yes, indeed. It is the Pebble Steel, because I was one of the first Kickstarter ones that got the Kickstarter model, loved it, thought it was great. Then I hung around for the announcement over the holiday break. And before the announcement was over, I'd bought two of them because it's a very, very impressive device, but also the Pebble Steel actually looks like a watch as opposed to a plastic toy.
It looks really nice, doesn't it? And, I mean, the whole smartwatch area is an interesting one. A lot of people say, it's flash in the pan, and, you know, no one's going to be wearing these things in a couple of years' time. But the Pebble sort of seems to be the standout product so far, and it's really interesting with the Steel is that they haven't changed a whole lot in terms of what it does other than the physical appearance, but in behind the scenes they've also been working on the software, right?
Well, they've been very clever with putting a Pebble App Store together. Mm. So the third-party developers who go and throw the stuff together are now putting it into that Pebble App Store. Previously, you'd have to hunt around the web to find out where stuff is, so it's a good point of aggregation for all of their cool stuff. And sure, you can stick 8 applications in your Pebble locker and make it look really cool. I mean, I use it for walking. I've got a few watch faces there that I might want to change. I mean, this one at the moment is telling me it's 22 degrees outside, and that's coming through the Bluetooth connectivity to my iPhone. Mm. And it also works on Android and everything else. So, look, at the end of the day, wearable tech is where it's at this year, I believe. When wearable tech looks good, that's even better, which is what you're seeing with the Pebble Steel. And when wearable tech is useful, like what you're seeing with Pebble, that's why other things like Gear fail.
Yeah, and doesn't need charging every 5 minutes and so on. So now, one of the things that the Pebble relies on is the e-paper display, e-ink display, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
And that's one of the keys in terms of a design decision that allows you not to blow out your battery life, and you can leave the screen on all the time. Whereas most of the other products, the screen times out, and there's pros and cons of how they do that. For instance, with Samsung's Galaxy Gear, yep, you raise your arm up to look at your watch, and by the time your eyes sort of fixated on the screen, it's probably awake if that's all working well.
Sure,
and you've got a colour display. But I mean, how do you find it in terms of battery life, and what are the functions that it's been
battery life is about a week. The functionality of when I use it for the walk to see what my pace is like and see how long I've been on my walk, it's pretty useful. But the thing isn't trying to be too cute. It's not trying to do so many things that are just really amazing. It's just doing a number of things really, really well and solidly. So it just works.
And they're a reasonably priced product too, aren't they?
$250 US. Mm. I mean, yeah, that's all right for a watch. I mean, these days people are spending a couple of $100 on a reasonable watch anyway. So if you're into this kind of stuff, this is probably the thing that you'll buy. And that's why I threw money at the screen before the announcement ended.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. Now, in terms of other technology that's certainly smaller than your traditional computing and technology platforms, something that I came across on the GigaRome site was talk about a US team that have worked out how to build what they're calling nano motors, made from tiny metal rods that can be basically manipulated so you end up with these tiny motors able to run around actually inside your cells, inside a human cell. It's quite fascinating.
What I'm seeing is that these are, it's kind of like having shrapnel inside your body, but
that's a good way of putting it.
In a very, very small way. But these motors, as I'm seeing, are actually manipulated by magnets and things like that. So that's very cool. I mean, how quick can you shrink down a human being to be inside one of these things? Much like that movie back in the 50s where, what was it, Journey Inside the Body or what? I can't quite remember the movie title, but it was quite weird.
Yeah, yeah. There's been one or two interesting movies like that. But getting any form of technology that can run around and do things. And I guess their hope is that they will be able to manipulate these. I think the article mentions using sound waves and magnets to do that manipulation. That they may be able to use these. To fight disease, basically.
Well, one of the things that comes out of this is that they can line them up like a little army and bust through a cell and completely kill disease, according to these researchers. So,
if you can get the placement right, otherwise you could be busting through who knows what, depending on where these things have ended up.
Pretty messy, but I guess these guys have got it well figured out.
Yeah, maybe. I guess you probably want to make sure that they don't stay in there because, you know, you can imagine, someone with some who's not trying to be quite so helpful that waves a magnet around near your body or something could cause you some discomfort, right?
Oh, they're tiny things, and sure, I'm sure they'll get them out of you. They know how many went in, they'd know how many would come out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it sits in the fascinating file for now. But if they can actually pull it off and do something with them, that's kind of cool.
Anything that saves your life, that's better than using tech.
Yeah,
we're into it.
Now, 4K TVs were really big at CES this year, and you know, right up to the 104-inch curved and the 110-inch. LG and Samsung sort of particularly taking that charge, but everywhere you look, we're starting to see those coming in. I looked on one of the New Zealand retailers' websites over the weekend. Harvey Norman or Noel Leeming, and they had probably in the direction of 8 to 10 different products, which if we'd looked 6 months ago, there might have been one or two. Still pretty pricey. I mean, we're talking around that $6,000 to $10,000 sort of start, right at the starting point.
Mm.
But the other piece of that picture is around capturing that 4K video. And of course, we're starting to see some lower cost products that can do that. The GoPro have got a model that does 4K, although only at 15 frames per second, so not really particularly useful for most video. But we're now starting to see a few more options land in the market. So Panasonic were showing off their GH4 at CES. And there was the Blackmagic with a new product in that space as well, which is an Australian company I know we've talked about last year. And a bunch of people had pre-ordered the Blackmagic, the 4K Blackmagic camera at, I think it was a $4,000 price, wasn't it? $4,000 US.
Yeah, and so when they launched it, that was so popular, and they had such a big production run, they dropped the price, what I'm seeing here, about $1,000 off it.
Yeah, that's quite nice. I mean, how often is it you pre-order something, you pay for it, and they send you your product and send you a refund for, in this case, a quarter of the price. So
they should have sent two.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. So I mean, Blackmagic, fascinating company out of Australia that have sort of blazing a little bit of a trail by undercutting, I guess, a lot of the more traditional brands. I guess we've also had the Red camera that's also really sort of stormed in and grabbed a lot of attention. The likes of Peter Jackson making use of that technology.
All the budding movie makers now are reaching into a point where it's becoming affordable to produce good quality stuff, and we're always looking for something that's got lots of clarity. Now, this is where the two areas are starting to meet, where content's being created in 4K, TVs are starting to come out in 4K. They both will reach that affordable point. What point? I don't know. I mean, I saw 4K TVs in the States recently for $3,500. So the wave, if you like, of the price dropping is starting to happen in some of the high volume markets.
Yeah, I think there's even a sub that, you know, a low end brand. There's, I think, a sub $1,000 you know, 4K TV. And yeah, I mean, there will be a whole mix of price points, and I think we'll see even our smartphones will be doing 4K video reasonably quickly, but in terms that of coming in at a more sort of professional quality, it's quite impressive what the Blackmagic 4K can do. Also, Panasonic with their GH4, which interchangeable lenses and so on, in their I think the Micro Four Thirds format. That's going to come in under under $2,000 US. So that will be an interesting product as well, and there's quite a few bits and pieces of news around that have popped online over the last couple of days. So it sounds like we'll be seeing that soon. I'm not sure how long it will take to get to New Zealand, but it's nice seeing those 4K video options open up, because if you're shooting video, it's nice to have something that's going to look really good in the future.
Yeah,
as we move to that 4K,
looks really dodgy right now on your 4K TV. It even looks really dodgy on your HD TV. I don't know whether you've seen your own videos from the 90s that you might have taken on that big camera that you bought for $3,000.
And
how crap they look now.
Exactly. So so it's good to see that. It's good to see those options coming through, and we'll hopefully be able to get our hands on some of that stuff and have a good look. I mean, perfect for those who have got their new Mac Pro and are looking to do some editing. I mean, having a lot of fun actually on the Mac Pro that Apple have given us hands on with, and the performance on dealing with that sort of stuff, you really do need a high end machine like that if you want to race through it from that editing perspective.
I think that is probably one of the most impressive gadgets we've seen in recent times being released. I mean, a few good things about it, not only the tech specs, but also the business model behind it, where they're actually getting this thing assembled back in the US now, instead of shipping all of their design plans to some contracted factory somewhere in the East, and it's great to see that they're creating wealth in their own country with these things.
Yeah, it's quite pleasing to see a move back to manufacturing in markets where the manufacturing had been outsourced. I mean, it seems that the US is has been sort of the biggest mover in that front, where we're seeing more of that offshore manufacturing either come back to the US, or in some cases we're seeing it come back to a little bit closer to home, say Mexico. Yep. That seems to be quite a move. Do you think that's gonna happen across a broader range of tech products, or is it more going to be the high-end products like the Mac Pro, although we've seen Motorola doing it with some of their smartphones?
I kind of think that the smart companies that actually maintain their margin and their pricing on their products will be able to afford bringing the wealth back home. The ones that are fighting on price will also be compromising on quality, I guess. So that's what you're kind of seeing with these manufacturers that say, hey, look, we're making a really good thing here. We're not shipping it off somewhere. We're making it in our own factories. We've got our own people doing it. And so it brings another quality story to quite an expanding audience that A, have the money, and B, want something to last. So that's what I believe we'll see again in the future.
And part of that story also is the technology that's allowing these processes to be automated more and more. So you don't necessarily need as big a workforce as you did in the past to do that production, because robotics is playing a really sort of key role in the manufacturing process.
And that's really cool, because you've actually got smart workers on the workshop floor, which means that the designers are quite happy to talk to them face-to-face as opposed to via email or in video conferencing across the world. So, yeah, it's interesting to see.
Now, there's a product called Log Me In, which a lot of people, particularly those that are involved in IT or help their friends out with their IT, with, you know, whether it's sort of on a professional or a sort of personal basis. You used Log Me In before?
I have indeed. It was a nice way for me to go and service my mum's computer while she was away, and so my support call would consist of just logging into the computer and fixing it,
yep.
Or having a look at what was going wrong.
Yeah, so perfect example of its use. Now, what's just changed is that Log Me In used to make their product available on a sort of a free basis, and now they've moved to a pay model.
Well, so they should, because this is the only way that you're going to get software innovation when it's paid for. You're going to get software innovation when it's free, because as well as an example, but that's also the time when that software company will be honing their business model, the product itself, seeing the metrics that come out of what happens when they launch a product for free.
Mm.
But you know, when their competitors are making a lot of money out of this stuff, then they should be joining the bandwagon with a professional product, professional support. And it's great that Log Me In are doing that.
Mm. Yeah, I think, definitely good for them from a business perspective. For those, you know, using it on that sort of casual basis, maybe help mum out with a computer, etc. A little bit of a frustration, I'm sure. There are, you know, various products available you can get a free trial for, but really this was, you know, Log Me In was the main product for doing that sort of thing if you didn't want to sort of front up with some money. For those that are looking for something new, there are there's a huge range of options in the market now to have a look at. So, you know, it's not a matter of that you're forced to jump and pay Log Me In. There are a lot of people with paid options. One of the ones that makes sense a lot from a business perspective is TeamViewer.
Yep.
And that's something that those involved in supporting IT within the business realm will probably have come across, because they've got quite a flexible sort of licensing model and an ability to reach out and support a large number of computers with it.
But the marvelous thing is that with these kind of products there, it is making it more accessible for you to go and give friends, family and businesses support and start your own enterprise, if you like, by saying, hey, look, I'll support you for $50 a month, blah, 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 and you're reselling this product. So those are the kind of business models that we're seeing with these software companies that are offering these things on an affiliate basis. So by doing that, by offering that support, the company itself can turn around to its partners. So it's a nice little ecosystem. Mm. They can turn around to the partners and say, well, this is how much money you're going to make out of that person's subscription who is labelled as your customer. So good on you.
Mm.
Well done. So Log Me In is a case of doing that. TeamViewer.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Real facilitators for that ability to provide remote support. We'll have a link or two up on the NZ Tech Podcast site to one or two of those products. If we can, we'll have links that give a discount. So we'll see what we can do there. Hopefully, that'll be online by the time the podcast is. And if there's a discount for you, it also means that there'll be a little bonus for NZ Tech Podcast as well in there. So you'll be supporting us by clicking through on those.
And believe me, Paul, you shouldn't be eating rice, mate.
Oh, thanks, mate. I'd love to be able to afford some bread. Where were we? Now, Wi-Fi security. This is an area that's sort of dear to your heart. Tommy's Zones, I guess, you know, bread and butter over the last few years has been providing Wi-Fi services, and there are other things that you do in there. But there was an article last week in the New Zealand Herald and some statements that were made that got you a little bit rucked up. Tell us about that.
Rucked up is probably a little bit of an overstatement, but more so ill-informed communications people who don't bother balancing their stories with reporters would be the better statement. I mean, one of the things that I saw with the Banking Ombudsman announcement that we saw was that don't use public Wi-Fi and do your banking on it.
That was sort of the headline, wasn't it?
That was the headline. And then one of the TV reporters decided to just interview the Ombudsman, and she said, please just don't use public Wi-Fi. We recommend you don't use public Wi-Fi at all. And it didn't come with the sub-statement that said, for your banking. Well, in fact, the headline should have been, do not email bank details on any connection and deal with your bank directly through their secure connection, regardless of what internet connection you're on. So, so sadly, I believe that they got that wrong. Wi-Fi security or public Wi-Fi security is as good as you want to make it as a user. Yes, it will be open. Yes, there are people that will happily sniff your traffic if they can work it out. But there's so many tools that you can use to secure yourself on some secure communication. Email, for instance, all email providers generally provide a secure way for
certainly
you to relay your traffic.
Yeah, the major providers, everything is a secure connection between your laptop and the provider. I mean, the thing to be cautious about is, yeah, picking up some random free Wi-Fi that someone's left open. Because if someone's leaving something open, yes, it could be by accident, and there's been plenty of that in the past, although less of that these days because most Wi-Fi equipment becomes secured by default. So if something's left open and you're not expected to jump through any hoops to access it and you're not paying anything, you should be a little bit cautious, right?
Well, the caution should be about what are you trying to do on the public internet connection that you're getting at the library, for instance. We've got many thousands of places that we offer service in. We're getting many millions of users every month using our services without any problems. And then to read what I would term as an irresponsible statement saying don't use public Wi-Fi, and they didn't name the bank, funny enough, in that statement that had accepted that person's transaction via email.
So what was it that happened? Can you run us through the story?
I can elaborate. A couple sat in a public Wi-Fi hotspot somewhere and transferred a six-figure sum out of their bank account or into their bank account, and someone obviously picked up those emails somewhere on that Wi-Fi connection
somewhere else in the process, who knows where it was,
picked up their insecure email, used a second form of authentication with the bank when they rang up the bank saying, here's my employment letter, it is me, it really is me, and can you please reverse that and put it into this bank account instead. This is what generally the concept was. And so then it was, public Wi-Fi hotspots are really bad. And in fact, it's like silly people dealing with that bank. You should not be banking with that bank that allows you to do such transactions over an open internet connection, over an open email relay. Your bank will expect you to communicate with them. My bank is BNZ. I communicate them via email internally inside their program, by sending them a random email from some random area. So
And there are, I guess, sort of checks and balances in terms of how things done. So if you send a fax to, or if the bank gets a fax from you, or a scan to email type thing with some instructions, then most banks are going to come back and actually verify it. I mean, we all know that it's reasonably easy to get someone's birth date, signature, and those other bits and pieces, which is, I believe, what they got in this case. They got those things, pushed it together.
Anyone with slight knowledge in 5 seconds.
And, you put it down, you generate a fax, or it can be via email. I mean, there's a whole lot of ways you can do this. The association with Wi-Fi, I think, is not particularly relevant, because there's a whole lot of ways that information. You can then send a letter to a bank and say, look, I'll give you instructions. Please transfer money out of this account to this international account or whatever it is. If the bank just actions that without double checking that it was you that sent it and so on, that's probably madness.
Well, in this case, I
would have thought.
Sensationalist headline caused by a junior communications person and endorsed by the banking ombudsman and then picked up by the media as a big scary thing.
Oh, well, these things will continue, I'm sure, and we'll have another similar story next week. What's Sony up to? What on earth are Sony doing? Is this a smart move that they're getting out of PCs? We're getting out of traditional computers, right?
When they first came out with the VAIO, and I don't know whether you know what the acronym of VAIO stands for.
There were a couple of variations on it, weren't there?
Video, audio, in, out. And that's what VAIO was. The Sony VAIO range. When that first came out, I thought they were the ducks nuts as computers. They were really, really cool.
And they definitely had that sort of Sony design element attached to them. Very unusual in anything other than an Apple based computer at the time.
They were the thing, the bee's knees above the Toshibas way back in the days when I used to buy laptops. Then they've admitted defeat last week to say, hey, this PC war is getting, or this laptop war is getting too hard. We don't have anything really in the portable computing space like a tablet or anything that we can sing and dance about. We really need to focus on a couple of core industries, which is consumer entertainment and bits and pieces like that. So they go and sell off their computer division. And so to see that happen, it's the white flag. Hey, we've given up. We'll leave it to someone else. And the company that they sold it to, which was Japan Industrial Computer, I think, or a company, are only going to concentrate on the Japanese market for those computer models moving forward. And support for Sony VAIO will continue at least for the next 3 months, from what we're reading in the PR. So if you've got a Sony VAIO, now would be a good time to have a think about what you want to do in the next 6 to 12 months when you want to change out your hardware.
Yeah, it's interesting timing, because we were just chatting last week, some things going around about Samsung moving out of the space. And, you know, it seems quite likely that it's not just Sony that's making this move. I know, you know, Samsung's numbers in terms of, you know, the number of laptops and so on that they sold in the last year were way down. And, you know, it's just not an easy area to make money in. That said, it also seems to be pretty hard to make money in smartphones and tablets in general, because most of the players there aren't pocketing big profits.
Well,
with Apple being the notable exception that is doing extremely well.
It's a notable exception because they know how to sell stuff. I mean, come on.
Well, Samsung is selling a lot of product in those particular spaces, but across the whole business, they're not doing particularly well.
Sure.
And I guess that's a reflection of maybe them being in some fields that that just aren't profitable and are dragging the business down. I mean, Sony's financial story, you know, we just had an update on that in the last few days, is not very crash hot at all either. So
it's woeful, but you have to go and cut out divisions that don't make money, and clearly with double digit declines in the laptop and PC space, you've got to make the correct decision, and so we'll see Sony still around in many years to come, but it's morphing into a really, really good gadget company that it should be, defining itself with a few good products. And so this was the thing that the 90s and you know, the last decade, a lot of these big brand companies diversified into so many ranges of everything from headphones right down to a calculator. And so they'd have all of these little business divisions and all of this cost infrastructure and sales infrastructure to go in there. And as soon as you start to see declines in some markets, they'd just subsidize it with other parts of their divisions. Those days have gone. Mm. And so you've got to actually make money in every single division if you are to stay in business and be a sustainable business with a 50-year business plan.
Yeah, and I mean, you can have a long-term business plan, but things are going to change tomorrow. You've got to keep changing and pivoting and making some pretty hard decisions, don't you? And you know, companies like Kodak that wiped out by not moving quick enough.
Yep.
Brand's still around, but Polaroid, who had a pretty difficult time. Although at the likes of CES, you actually see quite a bit with the Polaroid branding. They seem to, one of their moves is they license out their name, and other people can sell a Polaroid this or a Polaroid that.
Yep, indeed.
But I mean, they've turned into a consumer electronics company themselves.
But this is the point. If you're not changing your personality or moving with the times as many times as you are, like Madonna, then you're not going to be around. Yeah. And so really charting your course through those dangerous waters of where are we going to go next is just keeping to your core values as a company. So that's where it kind of rolls.
So another company that fits into that space of reinvention then would have to be Microsoft, especially with what's happening in the PC area. It's not declining in the same numbers that it is for some vendors. So I mean, Microsoft obviously right across and get a slice of virtually every PC or laptop sale in terms of a Windows license. But they've certainly had some challenges, and a lot of people have said Steve Ballmer's got to go. Of course, last year he announced that he would step down. In the last week, it's been confirmed that Satya Nadella is going to step up as the CEO. What's your thought on this one? I mean, he comes from a very different area than Steve Ballmer, in terms of his background. He's been leading a lot of the cloud initiatives within Microsoft, which seems to be very much where the market's going.
Satya is probably the wisest choice out of all of the so-called candidates that were being looked at. And, the decision that they made after Super Bowl to go and appoint him, which is essentially what the board of Microsoft did just after the game, and pay him his package. I think it's worth $92 million in the first 10 years or something like that. Look, the point is that he's got a good wingman, which is Bill Gates, sitting there working with him every single day of the week, so to speak, right?
That's pretty incredible, isn't it?
An amazing mentor.
Could anyone have guessed that Bill Gates would come back to Microsoft?
Of course he would, because if you think about it, it's his baby. It's as much as Steve's.
But he retired. He was just chairman of the board. That was his sort of final thing, and he was off doing his good deeds for
the world changes. The world. And I guess he kind of had a Lady Gaga change and decided to come back and help out. Help Satya move into it. The point is that Microsoft are moving into a very cool area with cloud connectivity, all of that stuff. Microsoft, Windows phones, all of these things are adding up to a very, very cool company re-emerging itself and crystallizing a good vision. Now, they've appointed someone that's in their 40s that kind of gets it, and he's relevant to the enterprise customers, very relevant to consumers. So I believe that is fantastic leadership for Microsoft. It's even better to have the godfather sitting on your shoulder. And it's magnificent to think that he could probably go on a super yacht and invite Steve Ballmer along to serve him drinks. But the the point is that the leadership of Microsoft is heading in the right direction. It's a magnificent company to work with, and we've only just started working with them as well. And so I think that what's happened now is going to really secure a good navigation change for Microsoft.
So tell me a little bit about how your company's working with Microsoft.
They bought a company that was valued a little bit more than their Nokia purchase, called Skype.
Right, so Tommy's own is working with Skype.
Yes. So we just kicked off a pilot, this week, with a number of sites around Australia and New Zealand for free Skype Wi-Fi by Tommy's own. So interesting initiative. We'll see how it goes. And if all goes well, then you expect to see it elsewhere around the world.
Oh, that's really interesting. And so Skype Wi-Fi, how does that work? Who gets access to that?
Anyone with a Skype account, or in fact, the free Skype Wi-Fi concept, anybody can get access to it. You don't have to be a Skype customer, but you get limited speed, limited time. It's kind of like a freemium service. If you want to do that for free without having a Skype account, go for it. But if you really want a good experience, you become a Skype member, or you buy Skype Premium and get yourself a really cool service. So it's not that expensive,
right? Because they've got it. There's the premium service, and I was familiar with that, and you get. That gives you access to the Tommy's own network and in other countries,
indeed,
doesn't it?
You buy a Surface today, and you get 12 months of Skype free Wi-Fi around the world, and Skype Wi-Fi.
Right. So in these regions, that tends to be leveraging the Tommy's own network.
Pretty much us, in Australasia and the Pacific.
So the free offering is a step down from that in terms of what you get, but just anyone can
join.
Wow.
Yeah. So expect to see a bit more news about that in the coming months when the pilot starts to really roll along.
Oh, that's really interesting. Now, Bill Gates, how important do you think he is to the picture, and how much do you think, we're going to see changing this leadership change? Yes, Satya Nadella brings a lot to the table, but I mean, Bill Gates was really the innovator that led Microsoft for so long. Do you think he's still going to have an edge and to be able to bring it in the same way, you know, if we look back at Apple and when Steve Jobs came back, he was able to really he came back in a CEO role, but really invigorated the company and completely changed its fortunes beyond what, you know, anyone, certainly any of the investors, I'm sure could have imagined to shoot straight past Microsoft and become the most valuable company in the world. Do you think we're going to see the changes that come out of the CEO change and Bill's involvement flip that back again, where Microsoft becomes even more valuable and successful?
I agree that it's going to be an incredibly positive impact for Microsoft. I mean, you think about it, Bill's been on sabbatical now for how many years trying to save the world, and he's done a very, very good job at that. And he's come back with a bunch of other life skills that he hasn't had to think about bits and bytes. And so what he's actually doing is applying some of that and helping Satya. And Satya, really, he'd be looking at him saying, have you ever experienced this problem before? How did you solve it? And so as a CEO, that's the most amazing thing you can get from a mentor as opposed to a chairman who has different motivations or a board member that's got different motivations. So having Bill Gates as your mentor, as a CEO of the company that he started, hello, pretty cool. It's not going to be another Steve Jobs story, believe me, where he waltzes in and causes a wind of change, but it's going to be a steady hand in charge of the tiller, along with a really cool navigator sitting in the corner answering questions as required. So,
well, it took Jobs, a number of years before we really saw the real sort of
a number of years and a number of tantrums. Yes.
Well, you couldn't count those, could you?
Well, not really, but that does motivate some people and some organisations.
Well, I'm just saying there are so many of them you probably couldn't count them from what we hear about his personality.
Exactly.
I think some really exciting times ahead, and I'm sure this must be exciting for those that are within Microsoft. And you know, I know there's been frustrations, you know, around some of their products, around Windows 8 as a product. You know, I think a lot of people just haven't got it. There's a lot of opinion that hey, they've just gone down the wrong track with it. But you know, I think with this, we'll see continued innovation, and it seems likely that the best people are leading the business forward now.
Well, the two big C's are there: cloud computing, and the other one is connectivity. So, and that's their kind of strategy. So, they're heading in the right direction, in my opinion.
And now, just something else that they are doing, which has obviously been where Apple have made a lot of their money, is selling hardware now. The Surface, really nice products. They're starting to sort of ramp up in sales. They're bringing Nokia on board this year. Any sort of personal opinions on how that's going to grow? Is this going to grow into a really big product line that will mean we'll see others like Sony and so on pull out of making some of these products because Microsoft's so successful?
Well, they had to take control of that part of the ecosystem because it was starting to get a bit wild with the whole of their pirated software into manufacturer X in the middle of nowhere coming up with their stuff. So they need to take control of their gadgets. And so if they're making solid gadgets that have really good service and support, pretty much copying is the best form of flattery. They should copy as much as they can of what Apple have done, allow people in the world to have a choice between this and that and the other thing. And people like Samsung are doing a great job with their own stuff. So the key gadget makers, it's good to see Microsoft really entering that ecosystem in a strong fashion. I think it'll go very, very well.
Good. All right. Well, we will look forward to seeing how that progresses. But I guess the point is, don't hold your breath. These things will take some time before we probably see most of the changes, because a lot of it goes on behind the scenes, doesn't it? Although what we have seen over the last year or two is that acceleration within Microsoft, where we're seeing that sort of continual iterating. And in fact, this new update for Windows 8.1 that's due out, I think the latest we've heard is April timeframe, is that's what, about 6 months behind the previous Windows, the Windows 8.1 release. And here we've got actually a change that isn't just fixing some bugs. They're actually trying to improve the user experience and making changes in that area. And if we look back, a while, it was always years between these sorts of changes. So they're starting to iterate faster, even if it's smaller changes, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a typical software development area: run fast, break a few things, but that's okay. Previously, it used to be run slowly, break everything, and then let the users come back and complain. So I think with Microsoft, with the amount of cash that they've got in the bank, they've got enough money now to hire the best people, the best teams, the best companies, and buy the best things to really concentrate on user experience, copy some great ideas that other companies have done, and still be relevant.
Good. Now, favorite apps that you're using. Now, there was one when I bumped into you in San Francisco a few months ago that you were using to help you get around the place, and word is that's going to become relevant in Auckland sooner rather than later.
Yeah, Uber. If you haven't heard of Uber, you really need to figure it out, go to uber.com and have a look. It's where you can order a private driver, if you like, from anywhere where you're standing. You know who the driver is. The driver turns up, knows who you are. You've got a driver rating when you've ordered this thing. You can choose from the category of car, whether it's a taxi, a Lincoln Town Car, or an SUV. And when I was using it in San Fran, where it was commonplace for everyone to use Uber, the charge for the drive to go from A to B is automatically done with your credit card. You don't need to fumble about for tips and stuff as well. And if the driver did give you the runaround, you can rate him, 3 out of 5, and then Uber will come back and say, "Hey, we're sorry, you had bad service. Here, have a bit of a refund." So they've got the whole frictionless payment system sorted out, made a ride frictionless, and made it more personalized, so the driver knows you know the driver. And so what we're seeing around the world, and having been recently funded to another $250 million from Google, you're going to see the expansion of Uber around the world. It's in Sydney and Melbourne at the moment. Used it over there successfully, although not so successfully in Melbourne, and you're going to see it here in Auckland. And
they're having a few challenges, aren't they? Because a lot of what they do is sidestepping the, and I mean, technology tends to do this, tends to disrupt industries, and they're able to sort of sidestep the traditional taxi model. And in most countries, most sort of legal jurisdictions, there's a model that allows for private car rentals.
Yeah,
and yep. And they slide in under that that private car rental model, much like renting a renting a limo or something. There's a transaction that sits outside what you would do for a cab, but they're actually not competing with those probably traditional driven
right
cars
now,
but they're competing with the taxis.
When Uber comes out in Auckland and you're a cab driver listening to this right now and you've got some brand on the side of it, debrand your cab immediately, change your license category and become an Uber driver, because you'll be so busy. Because people like that frictionless stuff. They like the accountability of the driver. They like the fact that you know who that driver is, and also having nice little knickknacks like a bottle of water in the back of the car and the friendly service. You know, most of the Uber drivers have things that are unique to their driving style. We had one driver that said, "Would you like some gum, sir? I've got this fine range here," and he just opens up this little thing in his SUV, and it's like he's got a dairy.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, these guys are making a lot more money being Uber drivers than just being private drivers on the side, or even cab drivers.
Mm.
So,
and even though they're driving the prices down, and as you say, making it a much more frictionless experience.
The regulatory authorities are a bit of a worry. I think that's a PR excuse. There will always be a business model that will work for a particular market, and I, for one, would throw money at Uber in Auckland if it was here.
Mm. Well, I mean, it seems to me like this will really transform the market, as long as the local councils and regulatory sort of systems don't end up messing it up. Of course, we do have Zoomie is available right now in Auckland, and
That's a payment mechanism. It's a company that is trying to disrupt the way that you order a cab and pay for a cab, which is great. Mm. Essentially, that's what Uber is doing. Mm. And the difference, though, in the States where they haven't got the great hear of some of the regulatory authorities is that there are dreams in 30 years' time, you know, the headlines in 30 years' time, Uber buys GM because it's buying all of the cars that are all driverless cars in LA. And so Uber is running these cars. Yeah, okay, that's interesting. But bottom line is frictionless purchasing of a cab ride.
Well, yeah, certainly the future of where it's going with driverless cars is an interesting one, but there's a little way to go before everyone loses their job, and passengers decide they're happy with such an experience.
People still want to wheel themselves around, and if they don't have to own a car and it's affordable, why not?
Yeah. Any other apps that are that have been sort of favourites for you lately? What is it that you use every single day other than the your browser and your email and social media apps?
Let me tell you about the shortest app that I've ever owned. I downloaded it, I gave it a go, and I deleted it instantly. Flappy Bird.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it drove me nuts within about 3 seconds, and it got the instant delete. And sadly, that app is no longer available on any app store.
Yeah, they pulled it, right?
Or should I say happily. Mm. But back to your question, the one that I use daily is my news aggregator, Zeit. So that's been great for me. They've done some really good upgrades in recent months to really figure out what I like to read and what I don't like to read. And there's always a flexibility to go off-piste and have a look around. And Spotify. I'm sorry, it's been around for ages, but I've been a recent convert to it, and I'm pretty happy paying them a subscription level for listening to music in the car or wherever on my wonderful 4G connection that mostly works around Auckland. But look, Spotify is a great app that I use religiously, and more recently we've just kind of deployed this thing called Ascena. I think it's Ascena. It's a team working thing. It's an app with High 88 is the app that plugs into Ascena, which lets me run projects among my team without email.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's some pretty good tools that are coming around for things like project management and managing tasks and so on that are sort of brand new cloud based sort of offerings.
Yeah, it's too early for me to call on that one, I've been using it now for I think this is day number five, I've been relatively impressed with it. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Well, it's always hard making those sort of changes because you want to jump into something that's going to really suit you for the long term. But often you don't know until you've actually jumped in and given it a test in the real world rather than just sort of playing around and thinking about what it might do. Yeah, huh?
Jump into the pool and then wash your face with it, and if it still works, great.
Excellent. Hey, well, thank you very much for your time, Steve.
Pleasure.
Always good to catch up. Now, remind us how we can track you down online on social media.
You can see me on Twitter at Simsy. You can always find me across on LinkedIn. I'm always there. Steve at Tommy Zone.
Excellent. All right. Well, great to catch up. Thank you for your time. For those that are listening in, you can, of course, also track down NZ Tech Podcast online, nztechpodcast.com. And we're across all of the social media platforms, Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and so on. So, good way to connect, so you keep up to date with anything that we're sharing. You can track me down also on the same platforms, Paul Spain on Twitter, and across the various social media. So, hey, thanks everyone for listening in. Do keep a watch out for our other podcasts. We've got the New Zealand Business Podcast starting to come out pretty regularly now, and a new podcast that we hope to be able to announce next week. So stay tuned for details on that one. Hey, thanks for listening. See ya.